This is Josh Sumby, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Drayton, North Dakota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson here in the studio. We'll also be hearing reports from Don Wick and Jamie Dickerman in Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasters annual convention. And at the 2025 National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, the ongoing struggle to get year-round E15 approved nationwide was a major topic of discussion. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Jamie Dickerman had a conversation with American Coalition of Ethanol Chief Marketing Officer Ron Lamberty and filed this report.
Lamberty says regulatory hurdles and industry hesitation continue to slow adoption of the higher ethanol fuel despite its benefits for farmers, consumers, and the environment.
This E15 thing just needs to get done. It's better for so many reasons, but the reason most people buy the fuel they buy, we'd love them to buy it because it's, renewable, it reduces emissions, it's made by your neighbors. But the fact is they all go in because it's less, and E15 costs less than E10. So, everywhere they use it, people like it. Stations that sell it, it's their best-selling product. You just got to get all the bureaucracy out of the way, and hopefully they'll get that done because some people might think it seems like a little thing, but it's big when it comes to, if you're talking about converting the bigger chunk of the market. I just think once they get that done, we'll probably see some pretty rapid growth afterwards.
Lamberty talked about the regulatory and legal hurdles keeping E15 from being sold year-round.
The rules say that you, in summer, there's a reed vapor pressure number that you have to meet. And so we use a different fuel in the summer. That's why the price goes up. And E15 is actually a lower reed vapor pressure product than E10 is. But when the legislation was written in 94, I think it is, they made an exception for E10. And it said 10% ethanol specifically. And during the first Trump administration, EPA, just at the end of that administration, made a ruling that said we could do it. Immediately, the American Petroleum Institute sued, and they ended up winning because the legislation says 10%. And so now every year they have to do an emergency exemption.
Lamberty says there's challenges facing stations and why removing bureaucracy is critical to the movement.
But in order to do that, you just got to move away some of the weirdness. And that's what E15 year-round does. That's what California approving it does. Now every state can use it. So, we're getting there, but stations don't like to change. And with a product like fuel, they order it, it comes in, people buy it. They don't have to display it. They don't have to. It's in a gas station, it's just a fact of life. And the more you have to think about it, the less you want to do it.
He emphasizes that once the obstacles are cleared, demand for the higher ethanol fuel could grow rapidly, benefiting farmers, consumers, and the environment. Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Jamie Dickerman on the Red River Farm Network.
Ethanol producers are raising concerns that California may significantly delay E15 gasoline sales due to lengthy certification and rulemaking requirements. The Renewable Fuels Association criticized the California Air Resource Board's, or CARB's, November 10 guidance, which calls for vapor recovery equipment certified for E10 to be reapproved for E15 by four state agencies. Those include Water Resources Control, Weights and Measures, OSHA, and the Fire Marshal. RFA says this separate certification is unnecessary and would undermine the AB 30 bill's goal of allowing immediate E15 sales, while urging CARB to quickly address emissions, safety, equipment, and labeling issues. U.S. ethanol exports are on track for a record year, totaling 188.8 million gallons in August. That's up 15% from July and 24% higher from a year ago, with Canada and the European Union accounting for most shipments. Year-to-date exports have reached 1.42 billion gallons, 16% ahead of 2024. Distillers, dry grains, and solubles exports hit 1.2 million tons in August. That's up 10%, led by Mexico and record movement to Colombia, Honduras, and New Zealand. The Northern Plains will see several rounds of precipitation over the next 2 weeks, with most areas remaining dry at times, but occasional rain or snow providing some moisture for winter crops. Temperatures will be unseasonably warm through early next week, then drop mid to late week, with highs in the 30s to 50s and lows in the single digits to upper 20s by next Friday. Central and southern parts of Brazil will stay mostly dry over the next 2 weeks, allowing field work to continue, while northern Brazil will see frequent rain, supporting crop development there. In Argentina, dry conditions will dominate, with a round of rain Wednesday through November 29th, improving soil moisture for crops, though western areas remain at risk of heat and subsoil moisture stress. U.S. Custom Harvesters Board President Paul Paplow says the 2024 harvest season delivered decent yields overall, despite weather delays and major disease pressures in parts of the Midwest. Paplow says his crews covered their full multi-state run, but rain and crop conditions made timing more difficult than usual.
This year's a pretty decent harvest. A few challenging times throughout the year, but overall it's pretty decent. You know, starting out was really slow, drought down in Texas, and it got really, really wet. You know, we can never really get any good running days in from Kansas all the way up through Montana, as every couple days it seemed like it'd rain again, but they had nice crops and just took a little longer to get to it. Made it a little more challenging getting scheduling and timing figured out, but all in all, I guess it worked out.
Paplow says yields were strongest around his home base near Worthington, Minnesota, while parts of Iowa saw major declines tied to disease issues throughout the season.
Probably the weakest I saw would have been the Hartley, Iowa area. That's where we harvest. And, you know, yeah, typically I would say there'd be a lot of 250, 260, maybe up to 280 bushel yields in corn. And 200 was topping basically all that off. It's just a lot of disease pressure.
The National Milk Producers Federation is voicing their praise for the Senate passage of the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act. The Senate unanimously passed the bill, allowing schools to offer whole and 2% milk alongside existing options, with only House approval and the president's signature remaining. NMPF President Greg Dowd says the bill helps children get back on solid nutritional footing. Bipartisan support in both chambers is expected. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you are listening to the Red River Farm Network. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. Artificial intelligence is being used in every industry, including agriculture. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Don Wick has more from Kansas City.
Jeff Garlick is the Director of Product Development for the Nutrien Hub, a digital platform that's integrating everything from crop insights and environmental data to financing options. To this point, AI has been highlighted as a tool for ag retailers as a way to save on labor. We asked Garlick if this technology is going to help the large-scale farmer as well.
Yeah, I think absolutely there is a use case for the farmer to do this. And in the past, if you're a large farmer, you have a lot of data to sort through, and so it's tough to surface what are the insights that I should really focus on. And I think that's where a lot of these new tools will help them say, these are the farms or the specific things that you should focus on first, versus them trying to mine that data on their own and get those insights.
So how can a company like Nutrien Ag Solutions help them maneuver through this space?
Yeah, so we are working on getting our crop consultants more up to speed with some of this technology, and then we are using the data that our growers are providing within our systems to help improve the recommendations that we're giving back to them as well, so that what they're using on their farm is as most productive as possible.
Do you get in the question of whose information it is and those kind of things?
Absolutely, right? This is still the grower's information. If they're giving it to us, they're giving us the consent to use it to produce something back for them to make it better than what it would have been without that data. The only thing I'd probably add is we did release earlier this year the Nutrien Hub. So that's our one-stop shop for financial, environmental, and agronomic data. And for anyone who's a Nutrien customer, they can go search Nutrien Hub on the App Store and download the app and start leveraging some of those insights that we do have available for them today.
Reporting from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting annual meeting in Kansas City, I'm Don Wick.
Strategic Trading Advisors founder Jody Lawrence says fertilizer pricing and transparency have shifted dramatically over the past decade, leaving farmers with less leverage and fewer clear signals as they plan for next year's crop. Speaking at the NAFB convention in Kansas City, Lawrence explained how global demand, shrinking U.S. market share, and tighter supplier control continue to drive uncertainty in nitrogen and other key inputs.
30 years ago, so in 1995, the United States farmer used 28% of all agricultural inputs produced in the world. What do you think that number one was in 2025? It was 8%. So it's significantly lower, and it's not lower because we're farming less acres. The world demand has exploded over the last 30 years for those same products. Now what you see is obviously Brazil's expansion during that time has been exponential. They are using more and more of the worldwide supply.
Lawrence says the reduced visibility in input pricing combined with rising global competition means growers will need to continue watching markets closely as they finalize 2026 planting decisions.
Just say we need this many tons of this here. Here's the price that we want that's on your sheet. And now it's, okay, here's your price. We're going to allocate you this many tons, and you have an hour to get back with me. So the entire dynamic of the market and that transparency that you're talking about has shifted so much in the last decade. When you have these extraordinary yields, and the only way the farmer can see to the other side, the only way they can make money now is to outproduce their annual yield, to have that extra money, extra bushels make up that difference, and that's why they're chasing it.
A new Waters of the U.S. rule has been proposed. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval talks about the new rule proposal and the need for clean water in agriculture.
Farmers and ranchers depend on clean water, so protecting natural resources is a top priority. We're pleased that the new proposed Waters of the U.S. rule safeguards waterways while respecting the conservation efforts of America's farmers. The Supreme Court ruled several years ago that the government overreached in its interpretation of what fell under federal guidelines. We're still reviewing the rule, but it appears to recognize the legal boundaries set forth by the Supreme Court and restores the balance Congress intended when it enacted legislation governing water more than 50 years ago. Farmers need regulations they can understand. We look forward to working with EPA to ensure that there are clear rules for clean water.
You are listening to the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Our guest this week is Ag Week News editor Jenny Schlecht. Jenny, what's on the cover of this week's edition of Ag Week?
On this week's Ag Week cover, reporter Noah Fish has a great Thanksgiving story. Every year, the President of the United States pardons a turkey, and the turkey gets to have an alternate. And last year, the turkeys were Peach and Blossom. They were raised in Minnesota, and they were pardoned by President Joe Biden. But what happens to a turkey after it's pardoned? Well, Noah visited Peach and Blossom to find out what they're doing now. And what they're doing now is that they are ag ambassadors at Farm America in Waseca. Farm America is an agricultural education center, and they're having a great year. They've had big events all year, and at every event, people are able to meet Peach and Blossom, who are now around 50 or 60 pound turkeys. So they're about as big as you will ever see a turkey. But having them there allows people to see a turkey up close, to learn about turkey production, and to really experience something kind of special, because how often do you get to meet a turkey that's been pardoned by a president? So it's a pretty fun story. I definitely recommend checking that out before you sit down to your Thanksgiving turkey this week.
Thanks, Jenny. Looking forward to reading about it in this week's edition of Ag Week. Checking quotes, December wheat Minneapolis is 6.5 lower to 566.25. December wheat Chicago, 0.5 cent higher to 527.5. KC hard red winter wheat December contracts 4.25 up to 510.5. December corn, 0.75 cent lower to 425.75. January soybeans, 2.75 higher at 1125.25. January canola in Winnipeg's $8 per metric ton lower to 642.20 Canadian. On the cattle side, December live cattle is 62 cents higher to 215.35. February live cattle up 47 cents. April live cattle up 80 cents. November feeders $1.20 lower to 340.65. January feeders are down 42 cents. April feeders up 20 cents. December hogs down 142 to 78.05. This is the Red River Farm Network.